Well, good evening and a very, very warm welcome to Highfields Church. Thanks so much for coming. Well done for making it. And I'm not sure whether... Did anyone do the marathon today? Half marathon? Any survivors? Just interested. So, yes, front row. Very well done, Joel. Good stuff. Lots of us made it through the marathon. And so that was good as well. But look, it's lovely to have you here. My name's Dave. I'm one of the pastors here at Highfields Church. And we're thrilled to welcome you to our second, life event. Here at Highfields Church, we love talking to people about Jesus Christ and helping ourselves and other people think through the difference that knowing Jesus makes in our world. And lots of people think, presumably, that Christianity is on the demise and people aren't going to churches anymore. And what difference can knowing Jesus make anyway? Well, we believe he makes a massive difference to our lives. And it's been great to see our church with numbers of people, young and old, from different nations coming together to find life in the name of Jesus Christ. So welcome, especially if you've never been to church before or new to these kind of things. Let me explain how we're going to proceed. Slightly different evening. So we're not going to be singing songs that you may be used to having in a church service. It's going to take the form of an interview. I'm going to introduce my friend in a moment. We'll have a short interview. I'll give a very short message from the Bible, from John's Gospel, which is on the little book that's on your seat, which we'll look at in a second. We'll then have a short break where we can get some tea and coffee, some cakes being provided for us, which is lovely. And then there'll be a chance for you to ask your questions. And to do that, we're using something called Slido. And maybe, Ollie, you can flick on there's a QR code on the screen, the Slido screen, please. And if you head on your phone, you can either snap that QR code and head onto that website or go to slido.com and head to Life 22 Fragile is the name of this event. And whether you're here in person, you might be watching on our YouTube channel tonight, and you can ask your questions, and we'll have a go at trying to answer them for the rest of our time. So that's the plan for the next a little while, and we probably will wrap up, I'm guessing, about 7:40, that kind of time. So, but don't rush away. There's refreshments. Lucy's going to be singing for us, which is great, so we're thrilled to have you here. Just to say, tonight's event is part of a whole range of different events taking place every night of this week and next Sunday morning. And on these little cards, which you'll find at the back, you'll get information about those events. They're all easy to turn up to. Tomorrow it's a craft night, then it's tapas and tunes on Tuesday. There are after school clubs on Wednesday and Friday. There's a classical music concert on Thursday in the daytime at 10:30. You're welcome to come to that. And then on Thursday evening, there's a big quiz. And then on Saturday, that's the only one you've got to book in advance, just so we ensure the kind of right numbers. Handel's Messiah concert, which we're putting on here at Highfields Church, 4 p.m, 7:30 p.m. as well. So, as well as next weekend and next Sunday morning, we're going to be baptizing some people. So maybe you've never seen some adults who've put their trust in Jesus and get baptized. That's happening in the morning, and then in the evening we've got another interview and another event on life in a lonely world, life in a hopeless world. So that's the plan for the next little while. Well, I'm thrilled this evening to welcome Anthony Williams for you. I don't know whether you have met Anthony before, but this is Dr. Anthony Williams, who is a consultant palliative care doctor and work in Morriston Hospital. So it's great to have you with us. Now, Anthony, we were chatting a little bit earlier, and you are a doctor and you're a Christian. And I was just wondering whether you always wanted to be a doctor and whether you were always... Tell us a bit about kind of background.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. I wanted to play football for Wales. That's what I wanted to do when I grew up. But my school didn't have a football team, which was the reason, and me not being very good as well. So there were the two reasons why my
key factors.
Yeah, I think Gareth Bale is the person that I could have been. You know,
We could all have been.
So I did a doctor. I specifically remember not wanting to be a doctor, but I was fascinated by the way our bodies work. So I went off to study human biology. Being a doctor really wasn't on my radar. But at the end of that period of study, I think I became more interested in how our bodies didn't work, the effects that has. So then I started thinking then about, trying to work as a doctor, which then led me to medicine after that.
Okay, so that's the beginnings of being a doctor, but being a Christian, were you always a Christian? Did you kind of...
Yeah, no, I wasn't always a Christian, didn't always believe in God.
Okay.
I think the more I studied our bodies and the way they worked, I began to become... I didn't believe in God, although grew up going to church. I wouldn't say that I believed. But the more I studied, the more I realized just how wonderfully complex we are as people. I began to become more and more unconvinced that there wasn't someone or something that was responsible for having made us. That was the kind of beginnings of me thinking about faith.
Before we think about faith, but tell us about growing up. What was important to you as a child?
Yeah, so I grew up, born a couple of minutes away in the Heath, so grew up in a great city. I had an incredibly loving family. So family and friends, really, really important to me. But I think as I got older, I got a growing sense of self-centeredness, so kind of I was really important to me. Making a success of myself, being liked, doing the things I want to do, I think they became really important to me as I grew up. I really wanted to kind of be someone, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Okay, so that's not being a Christian particularly, but how did you become a Christian? When did you come to faith? How did that happen?
Yeah, so as I said, this growing, slow burning sense that there was something, someone who had made us. I think coupled with the sense, as I thought through that my story, which became the most important thing to me, was maybe part of a bigger story, that I wasn't the center of my universe. Maybe there was someone who was. And then someone told me about Jesus. And so someone told me about the life of Jesus. And I think it was then that I began to be able to put a name to the person, the thing that I was beginning to realize existed. The Bible talks about Jesus being the face of the invisible God. It was that then that began to sort of just dawn on me who Jesus was. That was the kind of beginnings of faith.
Let's think about Jesus for a moment, because maybe you've come to church, you expect to hear about Jesus, but what was it about Jesus in particular that drew you to wanting to base your life on him and his teaching and his message?
Yeah, I think for me, by that stage, my story was littered with loads of things I wish weren't there, things I wish I hadn't done, things I wish I had done. And I spent a lot of time thinking through that. But then I think the message of the gospel is that in Jesus we have a God who enters into our brokenness. I mean, we've been thinking about life in a fragile world. We've got God up here who's completely not fragile, totally unfragile. And then he becomes, he inhabits our fragility, becomes this baby. He suffers and he dies. That the greatest extent of our fragility, I suppose, is that we die. He dies, I think, also that we know that it's not about us being good enough, because he completely is. I think that was then the time when I knew that I had to follow him.
Okay, thank you. It's lovely to hear the story. We've all got different stories. And maybe if you've been brought here this evening by a Christian friend and you don't know how come they're a Christian, ask them, like, why are you a Christian? What was it about Jesus Christ that made you want to follow him? It's a great and important question. Let's think about your job. I introduce you as a consultant in palliative medicine. What is palliative medicine?
So palliative care, for most of my time, most of the time, it's looking after people, trying to work with people whose illnesses we know can't be cured. So trying to improve the effects of that, whether that's improving symptoms, mainly so that we can help people to live as best as they can in the way that they would want to, focusing on the things and the people that are important to them. focusing on the time that is precious to them, that being time that could be as good as possible.
Okay. That must be quite an emotionally full-on kind of work, to work and to help people who you know are not going to get better. That must kind of take its toll on you emotionally. How do you cope with that?
Yeah, I think that's... Yeah, it is challenging. I suppose we all cope in different ways. I get to work with a really great team. I've got incredible family, friends. There's lots of big and small ways in which I cope. I suppose the thing that I think really helps when I think about the message of the gospel, I think in Jesus we've got a God who says, there is no thing that you could go through that God can't use for good. So I think it means that every day is a day that has hope. That there isn't a day that there isn't hope. And I think that's probably the thing that's made the biggest difference to me day to day, and kind of inside and outside of work, really. You know, I suppose we've all got challenges, both in our professional life, but personal life. That there is no one thing that God can't use for our good, I think is the thing that makes the biggest difference.
We've thought in the last couple of years about fragility, perhaps more than ever before. How has it been being in medicine, in palliative care, the last couple of years with the pandemic? That must have been tough.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's been pretty full on. It's been a bit like being in a washing machine on the kind of full spin cycle a lot of the time. And yet, I think... Personally, I've been working in a team that has been just a little bit shielded from the front line, if you like. I mean, the effect on some of my colleagues that has been really hard, witnessing that, really, the effects on them. But I think working in that environment where we're seeing coming really unwell, that's been a real challenge. But I think, as I was thinking through this, that the thing that I think really hit home that was different to, I suppose, normal life working in a hospital was that gap by the bedside. It's very rare that I go and have a chat with someone where there isn't their family member, their loved one, sitting next to them. And then that became the complete opposite, that there was this gap. And so I think that was the starkest change. And so I think witnessing that was really hard, but I think living through that, being the person who was unwell and then also isolated, I think that's been a really, really difficult challenge.
We were talking earlier about how I think the last couple of years, people have asked me questions about spirituality and what is the purpose of life, what's going on in life, more than I can remember before those last couple of years. And I answer those questions as a church pastor. As a doctor, when those kinds of questions come up, and I guess they might do, how do you deal with them, and where do you point people?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're encouraged as people who work in hospitals, people who work with people who are not very well, to see people as people and to care for them as whole people, which means asking them questions about all aspects of their life so that we can really understand them. As I said earlier, we want to help them to live as best as they can in the way that they would want to. And we're sometimes helping them to make decisions, choices about the future, about how to spend time, about maybe treatments to have, not to have. And so understanding them and their priorities, their values, what brings them meaning and value, and in the broadest sense, that's why I understand sort of spirituality, or the way that we would talk about spirituality and work. What brings people meaning and value? What's the way in which they view the world? Being able to talk through those things with people is an immense privilege, and hopefully helps us to care for people as best as we can. And I think that's been as we've been sort of talking about those things as much as we have done before.
Wow. Last question. talked about the challenges, the stresses, the pressures of being a palliative care doctor. What difference does knowing Jesus make to your being a doctor in that environment?
Yeah, I think it's as I said earlier, that sense that there is no one thing. Yeah. that we have a God who has completely inhabited our fertility, and he's completely turned that on its head. And so, you know, in many ways, our as I think it says in the Bible, our weaknesses now become our strength, because God uses those weaknesses for his good. So that there is nothing, and I don't say this glibly. It's really easy for that to sound glib, that there is no thing that God can't use for good. And actually, day to day, that's really hard to hang on to. But it is the Bible call that a certain hope. You know, I was thinking about this the other day. That there's the hope of Wales reaching the World Cup, and we've been there before, and we've missed out before. But that's not a certain hope. But this is a certain hope. You know, we haven't experienced it in its fullness, but that God can use everything for good, especially the things that we would find most hard. I think is the difference that it makes to me.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for sharing your story, and it's been great to get to know you. So let's show our appreciation to Anthony. Do you have a seat? We're now going to spend just a few minutes looking at an episode in the life of Jesus Christ in these little gospel books. Gospel basically means good news, and this is the fourth of those that was written. It's by John, one of Jesus' good friends. It's on page 28 is where you need to turn, and we're just going to think for just a few minutes before we have a little break where you can get a tea or coffee or some cake, and we're going to think about life in a fragile world. So I'm just going to grab some notes here, and I'm going to stand up, I think, because I'll find it a bit easier. Okay, so we're going to start. I'm going to read out verses 1 to 3 of John chapter 11. So maybe you can see little number 1 to 3. Now, a man named Lazarus was ill. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus lay ill, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is ill." We're going to think of three scenes as we study this aspect of the life of Jesus Christ. The first scene, I'm calling it living on the brink, living on the brink. I'm not sure if you've ever read the Bible before or you've got an impression of what the Bible is all about. But maybe sometimes people tend to think that the Bible is a bit removed from the realities of life, a bit disconnected from the real world that we face and the real world that we see. And maybe you have the view that people of faith can sometimes be a little bit disconnected, or they have everything neat and tidy and tied up and nothing's too weird and too hard to get our heads around. It all makes sense for people of faith, whereas actually in the real world it's much, much harder than that. Well, not a bit of it. Not a bit of it. This passage, which we've just begun to study, we're going to walk through the passage over the next few minutes. It tells us in very frank and open terms about how vulnerable and how fragile our life is. Even Jesus Christ was not removed from the reality of fragility. Our Bible passage will talk to us about that in a second, but earlier on in the Bible, Jesus himself is called a man of sorrows. He's called someone who's familiar with suffering and familiar with grief. He understands pain, he understands brokenness. And at the start of the passage we're going to look at John chapter 11, Jesus is aware that one of his good friends, someone called Lazarus, is ill. But it's not a head cold or a man flu or you know, something like that. He was really, really, really ill. He's laid out flat on his back. And talk is that he's not going to recover. How are you going to do it? How might Lazarus have felt if he was in that situation? They don't have the amazing kind of healthcare that we have today back in the first century. We don't know what his symptoms were. We don't know whether he was in pain or hard of breathing. We don't know whether he was struggling to sleep. Almost certainly his future dreams had been dashed and broken, crowded out by fear. I wonder how his family felt at the time. How would you have felt if a loved one of yours is suffering and struggling and teetering on the brink? Family who are unable to do anything, can't donate an organ or give blood, forced to allow nature just to take its course. Such uncertainty about tomorrow, dreams dashed. Maybe you've experienced something similar, living on the brink. I had COVID about a month ago, and I have to say, if you've had it recently, when you have recently recovered from COVID, you feel on top of the world. Like, once the symptoms have all gone, you feel like, come on, I can do anything. You know, I've got super immunity around me, and then, you know, make sure you don't get knocked over when you're kind of so excited, because that'd be stupid. But no. The fact is, there is no immunity from pain and fear. People of faith are not immune to the fragility of life. We face it just as anyone does. We still have the same ups and downs, the same roller coaster of emotions that we all do in a fragile world. You'd have thought that knowing Jesus would make things suddenly easier, but it doesn't. Sometimes knowing Jesus can make things a whole lot worse. I'm going to grab my Bible again. Sometimes knowing Jesus can make things a whole lot worse. Let me read from verses 4 to 7. When Jesus heard this, he had heard that Lazarus was ill. Jesus said, "This illness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So you can imagine hearing that. You think, this will not end in death. The roller coaster goes up. Good news, fantastic. It's not going to end in death. The roller coaster goes up. No, it's for God's glory, that God's Son may be glorified. Oh, God's got a plan in this. The roller coaster goes up. It's good news, it's good news. Nothing to fear. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. Oh, he's a human being. He loves people. He's got good friends. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed where he was for two more days. What? Jesus, what are you doing? The roller coaster comes crashing out. He's heard his friend was ill. His friend, his dear friend. Excuse me, Jesus. Your friend, your dear friend. He's on his deathbed. And Jesus staying put. The ambulance will not be coming. You're going to have to face the future on your own, Lazarus and Mary and Martha, the friends. Enforced self-isolation is coming your way, Lazarus. Maybe you've had to endure something similar over the last couple of years. The roller coaster coming, crashing down. It looks so good. We've turned a corner. Things are getting better. God's with us. And then crash, where's God? Where is he? Living on the brink. The only reason we're given is it's for God's glory, says Jesus, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Now, what does that mean? It's intriguing. It's a bit mystifying. It's confusing. Jesus is saying to his friends that he has a plan in our fragile world, though we don't always know what his plan is. He doesn't always show us his working. We have to keep reading to see how the plan unfolds. So the first scene, living on the brink. Second scene, scene two, falling into darkness. Falling into darkness. Well, if lying on a bed all alone is the roller coaster crashing down, 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 it's going to get a lot worse. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to jump down to verse 17. Have a look down to verse 17. On his arrival. So Jesus waited two more days. He's been a couple of miles away. Jump verse 17. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Tragedy strikes. Tragedy strikes. He's been in the tomb 4 days. A beloved friend has gone. A beloved brother has gone. Maybe if mom and dad is still alive, a beloved son is gone. The community is there. A lost one cut off in his prime, death. It's a great enemy. The great indicator of the fragile nature of the world we live in. The great leveler. Whether it's COVID or cancer or a car crash or a cruise missile in a war. When death strikes, the bottom falls out of your world. There's nowhere to hide. Maybe you've experienced it recently. Maybe you're walking a path at the moment. That crushing loss. Sleepless nights. The fearful waking up in the middle of it all. The pain that no medicine or painkiller can get close to touching. Maybe you've watched the TV show Afterlife with Ricky Gervais. Tony, the lead character, devastated at the loss of his wife Lisa. Can't get over it. Lashing out. Shouting out. It's so wrong. He's so broken. Well, Lazarus' sisters can't resist the obvious question. Jesus, you've been doing some amazing things. You've been saying some amazing things. You're the one who claimed to be from God. You're the one who claims to have the power from God to stop the pain, to stop the suffering, to put your foot down on it in mid-action, in real time. You're the one who could totally give solidity to our fragile world. If you had been here, my brother would not have died. Let's see that at the end of the passage. You'll see verse 32 at the end of the passage. Let me read out verse 32. This is Jesus speaking to Martha. Excuse me, to Mary. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet. Little number 32. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Jesus wept. See the humanity of Jesus. He's weeping. When Jesus entered the world, he was God, as Auntie has so helpfully said. There's no reason for God to be fragile, but when he took on flesh as Jesus Christ, he became fragile. He wasn't aloof from the pain, just with an angelic glow all around him, never feeling its bite, its sting. Bouncing off like he had a force field around. No, he felt the pain. Friends, in our fragile world, Jesus gets us. You're not out of his mind. What are you going through? When you're suffering and struggling, when you're on your own, no one understands that. He understands. He gets it. He gets us. One author calls Jesus' tears, the ministry of tears. Jesus wept. Sometimes when you're aware of the fragility of life, before anyone cares what you know, they need to know that you care. They need to know your tears. In the Old Testament part of the Bible, perhaps the most amazing study in the fragility of life is in the book of Job. Not sure if you've read the book of Job before. It's a powerful, bruising read. But Job, he loses everything. He loses his wife. He loses his kids. He loses his possessions. He loses health. He's on his knees. And he has friends, so-called friends, who can't help but give their two pennies to advise what has gone wrong and how to make things better. The best thing his friends do, actually, is sit in silence for a week. And then the second they open their mouths, they put their feet straight in it. They can't get it right. But Job needs someone who's going to sit with him and weep with him in his tears. Well, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. He understands us. He understands the grief, the fragility that we go through in our lives. Oh boy, does he understand. That's what Mary understood. But Martha got to Jesus first. Have a look down in verse 21. And we're going back up a little bit here. This is Martha speaking, so you've got to flick back a page. And she says exactly the same thing that Mary says. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Different sister, same emotion. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. The background here is that Martha and Mary were religious people in the first century, and they had been taught since childhood that one day at the end of history, all people, all of God's people, would be raised to new life in an amazing resurrection at the end of time. And when they hear Jesus say, yeah, he's going to rise again, they're thinking, oh, you mean then, at the end of history? That's not much good for us right now. And then Jesus comes in with his ministry of truth, not just tears, but truth. He says, I, verse 25, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? See, Martha's got the wrong end of the stick. Yes, Jesus will enable people to rise again at the end of history, but Jesus come to give new life right now. It's wonderful to know that if we're trusting in Jesus, at the end of our lives we'll die and go to be with Jesus in heaven, and that's the great future promise of all those who know and love Jesus Christ. But you know, he wants to give us life right now. And his most powerful of illustrations of his ability to give life right now is what he does next. You see, the fact is, Jesus knows that it's only when things get really, really dark that you can see how bright his light will shine. Take these lights here on the stage. We've made these lights. If it was really, really dark and the lights go off, you can't really see the lights there. But when the light... Now, if we were in the pitch black room, like, you know, we might have been if we were a few hours later, we wouldn't see anything at all. But then the lights go on. You think, wow, there is the light. There is light here because there's such darkness. And Jesus Christ, in his strange plan, allows us to walk through great darkness. And he allowed the family of Lazarus to walk through great darkness so that they would see the light that only Jesus can bring. Which brings us to the third point. We've seen living on the brink. We've seen falling into darkness as he dies. But listen to this. Let's see rising into life. Let's see the conclusion to the passage. Once more, Jesus, deeply moved, came to the tomb. His little number, verse 38. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. But, Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there's a bad odor, for he's been there for 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God? So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you, you've heard me. I knew that you always hear me. But I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you have sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth round his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. Jesus says, Lazarus, come out, and he comes out. He rises to new life right now in history, a man who once was dead. Friends, one day we will all still die. Sadly, will it be COVID? Will it be cancer? Will it be a cruise missile or a car crash? We don't know. One out of one, 100%, all of us will one day walk the path of death. But new life is available. There is hope in the face of suffering. There is life in a fragile world. And that life is the life that comes through Jesus Christ. And so the key question, which I want to leave you with, and I've just started a conversation right now, the key question I want to leave you with, as Jesus said, I'm the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, even though he or she lives, they'll die, but they'll live again. Do you believe this? Do you believe it? I can't imagine, if this is the first time you've ever heard it, do you believe it straight away? Well, there's a conversation to have, and I'd love to talk more with you. And so let me explain what's going to happen now. We're going to have a little break, and Lucy is going to sing some more songs for us on the piano, and we're going to bring in some tea and coffee, and it's going to be served at the back. So our refreshment team have been hard at work getting tea, coffee, and we've got some cold drinks available as well, some cakes too, about 15 minutes of mingling around. And then while that's going on, why don't you head over to the Slido page, because we've done quite a lot of talking so far this evening, but it may be that you want to do some talking, particularly asking some questions. We'd love to answer your questions. We'll do our best. Andy's going to join me at the front. And so get your smartphones out and head over to slido.com, hashtag life22fragile. And you can put a question in and we'll try and answer it in about 15 or so minutes. So that's the plan for the rest of our time. Thanks so much for listening, but make sure you grab a tea or coffee. We've also on the back table, there's some little cards, response cards. If you'd like to find out more information about Highfield Church or would like to meet up with someone to study the Bible or to join a small group after Easter to study the Bible, we'd love to do that with you as well. So we're going to have some music now with Lucy, wherever she is, and she's going to play for us, and you may want to say hello to someone nearby, but grab a tea, grab a coffee, grab some cake, and we'll see you back again here in 15 minutes. Thanks. Okay, well, thank you all so much for staying, and it's just 7:30, so I think we're going to have about 15 minutes of Q&A. If you need to head when you do, that's fine. But we're keen to work out how to do it. If you've got a smartphone, then what you can do, you can either enter your own new question or you can upvote the questions that other people have said by sticking up a thumbs up. So it's a very democratic way. There's no fudging or hiding the questions that people want to ask. So here's question number one, Ant. So I'm going to... I'll start and ask it to you, and then you can have a go. It uses everything for good. You said that, and I kind of said something similar as well. What if it doesn't seem good? Thank you for your question.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think there'd be loads of ways and I'll answer it, but I think the thing that I always think about when I think about this question, I suppose it's a question about suffering, isn't it? When it doesn't seem good, I think for me it's starting off by remembering for me that the Bible talks about that very clearly. We thought about life in a fragile world. The Bible says very clearly life is fragile. It doesn't shy away from that. And it also says very clearly that that's not the way life is meant to be. So when we have a sense, and I think we all do at times, sometimes greater than others, that life is not the way it's meant to be, that life doesn't seem good, right, fair, that's how the Bible talks about life.
In the Old Testament, the first half of the Bible, in fact, the first book of the Bible, Genesis, famously, Joseph, he's the guy who's got all the brothers, Technicolor Dreamcoat, thrown into slavery, falsely accused of sleeping with his boss's wife, thrown into prison. Eventually, God turns it all around. It's a very, very, devastating personal life and family life, and yet God works through it, and this is what He says at the end of his army that God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saviour of many lives. And the very same act that the brothers were intending evil in, that very same act, God was using that in the life of Joseph and in the lives of many other people to accomplish good. Now, does that mean, is that the end justifying the means? No, I don't think it is that. It is to say, God is the master chess player at the time, or when we're one of the pieces, and it looks like it's a pretty hard situation. And we can probably both think of instances in our lives and families where something really hard has happened. But I think that, years ago as a child, we had someone who used to stalk our family, put bricks through the window, beat up my father, and it was a terrifying time as a child when I was about age 11, 12, and I went to sleep at night, afraid of people attacking us. And then I look back, and I wouldn't have traded that really terrifying, traumatic. You sometimes don't even see the brightness unless it gets quite dark. Now, would I have wanted it at the time? No, I would have wanted anything but it. But if you have a God who's big enough to organize these things, you have a God who has a plan in these things that you don't yet understand. And so I think I'd say that, which I think continues your point. But the Bible is not afraid of that theme at all.
I think I said something like, could use everything good. I really don't know if he does use everything for good, but I think what the Bible talks about is a God who's big enough to use everything for good and cares enough to use everything for good, because as you said, you've got a God who came down, became fragile for us, and you know, stood by the grave of his friend and cried. So this God is big enough and cares enough, and so we will always have these unanswered questions about the why. But I think the Bible talks really clearly that says that we can have confidence that even when our questions remain about the why, we can know that we've got a God who's powerful enough and cares enough to ultimately. You said about the chess pieces. In my head, it's a bit like having puzzle pieces, and you've got, but the other puzzle pieces are to come. And then when the puzzle is completely made, eventually, it's going to be the most amazing picture ever seen. But we've only got maybe the little corner, the little black bit of the corner, and it seemed that that's a bit of a rubbish piece. What's that doing here? Why is it here? But we only when we see the puzzle made completely, we'll see how that black piece fits into the bigger landscape of what God is doing. I think that's what I come back to when
Thank
I think
you.
About that question.
You'll be able to see on the screen, there's no hiding it. So the next question, who are happy in life, good job, home, etc. Then it's okay to say, you know, he's their job, and when things are on their knees. But when things are going well, why would you need Jesus? I suppose one initial question or thought I had on that is that, you know, tell us why you need Jesus, Anthony. Because, you know, humanly speaking, you're married, you've got a lovely family, you have got a successful job, and seemingly good health. Yeah. So why do you need it? It's okay why your patients need Jesus, because they're on their last legs. Why do you, as a doctor who seemingly, you wouldn't put it this way, but you know, in lots of people's eyes might think, you know, why would I need Jesus? It's all kind of going well. And maybe that has been your story. I don't know, when you went to university, things were going well, but you still felt there's actually, no, this is not it. This is not enough.
I think, I suppose, knowing my own heart is one reason why I would think I need Jesus. I mean, I think when I think back to that question, why we're all really in the business of palliative care, because ultimately we can't fix the thing that is coming that I suppose most of us would want to try and do something about, the fact that one day we're not going to be here anymore, or one day we're going to be less able than we wish we were. So we're, there is a tendency, maybe, certainly in my head and my heart, maybe in the world around us, to push away, to defer, to no denying that for lots of people, and in some ways for all of us, life is good in certain ways, and that's a great thing, that's a blessing. We should be really grateful for that. But there is, for all of us, a time coming when either things are taken away, whether our lives or our health, quickly or inexorably, the path towards getting is coming. And it's thinking through what could happen. And when we think of what the gospel says, it says that in the good times and the bad times, we can have someone who we can place our complete trust upon, because we know, good or bad, he's going to hold us.
Yeah, thank you. Time is flying by, and I'm conscious that we can't spend the whole evening, but I think we've got time for one more question, which I thought is a great one, top of the list now, actually. If life is really difficult now, how does Jesus actually make it better? If life is really difficult now, how does Jesus actually make it better? I suppose, I'll start with that one, and then you can come on. Well, for starters, that may be a hypothetical question. It may be a genuine, personal, now question. So in a sense, I don't want to give you a theological right answer when maybe right now you really are in you know, kind of on your knees, and you need a friend who sits quietly for a week rather than a pastor who just tells you all the answers, you know, in the moment. So please, if there's kind of some greater emotion behind that one question, please have a word with maybe a Christian friend who brought you along, or have a word with myself or Antti or one of the team at the end. We'd love to hear your story, walk with you in that your life being hard right now moment. I suppose what I would say is that there are two things you really you need desperately when you're in a really difficult place. One, you want someone to be there, and the last 2 years have been really hard. You identified, Antti, how the tragedy of the hospice with the empty seat by the bed just breaks my heart. And you need someone to be there. And in the Christian gospel, the good news about Jesus, we believe that Jesus, one of his names when he was born was Emmanuel, God with us. He comes near, he draws near. And he's just a prayer away. He will draw near to you as you call to him. That's his promise. So you want someone who will draw near, but you also want someone who will make a difference. You know, it's great to have someone who draws near and understands and helps you in the pain, and you want somebody who makes a difference. You can have great bedside manner, but can't make a difference. And I'm sure, and when someone is eventually going to pass, and you're desperately trying to make it the least painful, the least traumatic experience, but in the grand healing, you can't make a difference. You can't change the course of the story. But Jesus, with his presence, he offers to change the ultimate course of our story. You know, that doesn't mean that he'll stop you dying. You know, and Lazarus still went on to die. But he will give you a new quality, empowered relationship with himself, life right now, which transcends the greatness of life, whether you're a successful doctor, family man, or whether you have the hardest of lives. It will be better than the hardest of lives. And it will be knowing him right now and a relationship which will last the years. And and he makes all the difference in the hardest of times. And if you meet someone who has suffered and is a follower of Jesus Christ, the difference that their following of Jesus Christ makes is phenomenal. And I've got plenty of friends who have suffered, who've been Christians and have maybe you've had a brain tumor, and I've seen them the way they finish their lives glowing with hope in the Lord Jesus Christ as their Savior, who they know who will never leave them in this life or the next. Anything to add to that, Ant?
Yeah, I mean, as you said at the beginning, we all of us, either now or at some point in the past or the future, that is a live question, isn't it? Yeah. You know, what about the fact that I'm going through this now? And it's really easy to sit here and say stuff that probably would be less helpful than we'd want. But I think the thing that I think about when I think about that question is we talked earlier about how the Bible talks about is recognizing that life is fragile and that is not the way it was meant to be. I think the other thing the Bible says is that because of what Jesus has done, coming into here, not fragile, fragile, so that he could live, die, rise again, he's defeated the thing that we could be maybe most scared of.
Yes.
And I think the other thing, which I can't really wrap my head around, I mean, this is what the Bible says, but I can't really get my head around how this works, but says that, okay, so someone's coined this phrase, and not really in a kind of religious sense, but that what is the opposite of being fragile? So fragile means being at risk of, chaos. What's the opposite of fragile? Someone says, well, the opposite of fragile is to be robust, to be strong, to be durable. That's not the opposite of fragile necessarily. The opposite of fragile is that you might actually flourish in your chaos, in your difficulty. So it's not just that you'd stay the same, but that you would become better. You become, in some way, flourish. And there isn't really a word for it. I mean, that's how ridiculous this concept is, that there isn't a word in almost any language that is the opposite of fragile. So someone's had to coin it anti-fragile. But the Bible talks about that. It talks about the God, Paul talks about, take this difficult thing away from me. We don't know what it is. And he says, no, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So in all of the things we could say about that, I think we can know that when we're going through difficult things, that isn't meaning that life has less meaning for us, that we're less useful to God, that we're less worthy. Because actually, in the kind of radical nature of the gospel, it's actually in the difficult times, in our struggles, in our sufferings, when God exploits our sufferings for our good. God uses them so that we can flourish. And again, it's really easy to say that, and that sounds really glib. But I think that's what the Bible talks about. And so I think that's the one thing that we can know in the pain. God can use this for our flourishing. And knowing that one day, you know, people who do jobs like mine won't exist anymore, because there will be no palliative care in heaven. No hospitals, no funerals.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. It's amazing, isn't it, that the description of the way Lazarus is risen from the dead. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone across the entrance. Take away the stone, he said. It's interesting. That's the first instance of a stone needed to be taken away, which Jesus orders, take the stone away. 10 chapters later, the stone is taken away when he bursts through. He's the one who has died and come through the other side and gives hope and offers a future that, where there'll be no more death or crying or pain. Hey, Anthony, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.